Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 122 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing surprisingly, okay. I guess. I don't know why it's surprisingly. I'm generally okay. But
you're generally okay.
Yeah. I'm leaning towards pretty good. So, we're getting, by the end of the show, I think I'll get there.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight. There's a lot more info dump on the new Dungeon Master's Guide. And I don't know about you, Ben. I think this is the one of the three books that I'm the most excited for.
I completely agree with you on that. And being a DM most of the time, granted, I do play other times, but being a DM most of the time, having new, tools and stuff and shinies to look at and everything is always a plus. But from the breakdowns that Wizards has started like releasing in video form and everything, I am just like incredibly giddy about this. Like, this is going to be D&D Christmas, like, for a while. Because from everything that I've seen, it looks like this DMG is going to be kind of the gift that keeps on giving.
It looks like you can tell that this is everything that they were wanting the DMG to be originally, but they didn't have the time or the budget. Or let's be fair, the 10 years of experience from this edition that they do now. So we're really, really excited to talk about that, and also probably talk a little bit about a secondary topic of player renown, which is always really interesting in how you want to build things up in your world. So, Ben, let's hop in real fast to some of the new stuff that they've talked about from the DMG. Mm-hmm. First off being new crafting magic rules.
Yeah.
So what's going on with this?
Well, if you remember, you remember because you were here, but it's in the player's handbook. They do have some magical crafting rules already for potions and scrolls and everything. This is going to be for those extra fun things, magic items, weapons, things like that. Basically, everything except for artifacts, you're going to be able to, have instructions for crafting. The idea behind it of putting it into the DMG over the player's handbook is that this is where the DM will actually be able to kind of help you along with, figuring out what you want to make and like the rules and the guidelines on how you need to go about getting there. So this isn't going to be just one of those, hey, I want to make a potion of health. Cool. I can make it. This is going to be, hey, can I make a weapon that could do this or that or whatever? It's giving you, kind of like the framework to make things more than just magic items that are already in the game. Now, mind you, there are, or by following these instructions, you can totally make magic items that are already in the game anyway. Whether it be like the example they used in the video was the Wand of Magic Missile. You can totally craft one of those. You have the ability to. And the big difference between this and what you're looking at for like potions and scrolls is that there's going to be actual like, roles, requirements, and everything going into it. And one of the biggest ones is that you need proficiency with the Arcana skill just to start doing magical items, which to me totally makes sense. You need to have some sort of knowledge of the arcane in order to make a magical thing. Totally works. But then the thing that I thought was really interesting on top of that was that it's also going to require a tool proficiency with it. So going back to the wand example, you would need like woodworkers or carving kit or whatever it's called. Because you need to be able to actually like create and make the wand itself. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. If you're, adding magic missile to the wand, you need to be able to cast magic missile. It's, kind of right there in the title. Again, makes sense. So like those three bits, totally logical, makes sense. And then off of that is where the DM really kind of gets the information that they've never really had before, which is going to be the time that's going to take, the gold cost that's going to take, And based on that, you can kind of, you know, work with your players to figure out, okay, well, it's going to be, you know, this long, take this much. If you have people helping you out, it'll be, you know, shorter because, you know, more people working on it, less time. But then you can start looking at different things like, okay, well, is the gold going to cost more because you're actually paying people to help you out? Things like the availability of materials is actually going to matter. You know, if you're in a small, like podunk town, they might not have the, I don't know, the gemstone that you need in order to make your, hag eye or something. I don't know, whatever. So you're able to kind of control how that happens, or, there's always a possibility that if they're looking for something specific, you can, you know, add a quest adventure hook tie-in so that they're actually going and trying to get this thing so that they can create their, plus one chain mail of fire absorption or something along those lines. So it really kind of gives the DM a lot more control and, you know, more fun in order to just, okay, well, it's going to take you 3 weeks to make a plus one sword. You know, you have guidance on this and everything. And then on top of that too, it is also going to be up to the DM on if it's even something that's going to be possible to make, because, you know, as a DM, players always reach for the sky. And sometimes they're not going to be able to pull a magical weapon out of it. But like overall, just the skill or the things and everything that kind of went with that is pretty great. But on top of that, you're able to, you know, name different items or, you know, create new weapons and things.
Customization is super cool because they specifically made a system because, you know, you've got the items that it, like Tasha's Cauldron, right? That's an actual magical item. Obviously made by Tasha. So now you can have Fallwinds something or other, you know, right, Ben? Like,
you get Fallwinds to name loot the item. Of vicious mockery.
Yeah, you get to name the item. You get to give it thematic touches for, like, what does it look like? What specific flares are added? And then there's also, at the DM's discretion, you can add minor properties to the items. Mm-hmm. These range from aesthetic choices, like a weapon that emits dim light, to functional bonuses, like an item that acts as a natural compass. And also, they've got a quirks table as well, which is really cool, that includes unique thematic elements such as a dagger shaped like a snake that hisses when removed from its sheath. Just, you know, cool stuff like that, to where it's just like, it's not just a plus one sword or something like that. You might be able to add in some of these quirk properties or these minor properties to kind of make it your own, name it, and make it look like you want it to.
Yeah. And even more on top of that too, this is also giving the DM a tool to use to actually craft their own magic items that they want to put in the game. It gives you, you know, kind of tables to choose from and, you know, different ideas to go off of. In fact, one of the quirks that they talked about that I think is absolutely horrid and I love it so much is the grotesque quirk, where the example that they use was that like the handle of your sword is like a tentacle that's going to, you know, slowly like wriggle in your hand as you're using it or something. And that just is absolutely gross and horrible. But I want to make something really weird like that. So, I mean, just because it's in the DMG and it's, you know, guidelines for the players to create stuff doesn't mean that as a DM, you can't just take this and completely do it on your, or use it for your own stuff. I mean, like right now I'm using things like, you know, just D&D Beyond and like, you know, finding something that's kind of what I like, but then copying it and thematically adding to it and changing it and stuff. Whereas this really feels like it's going to give you a good basis. And then on top of that too, like kind of add that rarity to it so that, you know, how important or how valuable it actually would be. So I think that this is actually a huge boost and huge boon to DMs and players alike. And I mean, you've been talking about crafting and crafting systems since I've met you. So I know that this is kind of like a big thing for you. So I'm excited that it's finally coming in, and just seeing the possibilities of it has turned it into something that's is definitely going to be, you know, much more prominent and at least available in my games going forward. I'm really great about that. And then on top of that too, which we've kind of touched on Bastions already, crafting magic items is something that could be done in a bastion, which means that, you know, your bastion turn could be used to, you know, craft magical items or work on them or whatever. So it's also tying that into another system that's coming to the game. So like overall, it's pretty great how all this is, you know, working out and falling into place.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this is, I'm glad, again, it's not the most robust system ever built, but it is a lot more than we have now. Mm-hmm. And I think it gives enough guidance that it will help DMs and players, for those people who do want to craft or achieve those types of things, especially in those mid to high tier type gameplay.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And speaking of tools, this is one of your favorite things, and I'm going to let you go off on this, but, they also previewed the DM's toolkit chapter. It's an entire chapter just full of basically, here's all the things that you wouldn't necessarily do on a session to session basis, but they're mm-hmm. incredibly important to have when you need them.
Yeah.
So Ben, why don't you kick us off? What's in this DM toolkit?
Yeah, the DM toolkit is basically everything that was scattered throughout the 2014 DMG that didn't really have a place, but is really useful and helpful for a DM to use, and thrown all together in a chapter. And based on the video, they went over a lot of the stuff, and it's things that you would think would be in a DMG already, but some of it really isn't, or it's just really buried and hard to find. And just to start off, like dungeon creation, it talks about how to like create and customize dungeons, adding in apparently their new word of the day is quirks, because they're adding in like different quirks for the dungeons, different details that you can add in, so you can actually just completely roll up a randomly generated dungeon, like, you know, very fast. They give rules for like if it's been dilapidated, or, you know, different styles of it, where it's located, because a dungeon isn't always necessarily just a buried place, you know, somewhere in the world. It could be like they said, inside a dead animal carcass or something, or, you know, maybe inside a beautiful palace. I mean, a dungeon is basically whatever you want. That's an environment that has challenges for the players to kind of get through. Next up, they have a very important section in there that I think that the original DMG doesn't really touch on a ton, and that's handling character death. So this way it kind of gives guidance of, okay, what happens if a character dies? What happens if the whole party dies? It's going to, you know, give you kind of options to move forward, how to handle it, and ways to kind of bypass that as well, which again, for new DMs or someone who hasn't really, you know, played a whole lot, like, my experience with it when I was running fourth edition, I didn't want my characters to die. So combat was really boring because they're always going to win no matter what. But since I've, you know, graduated to fifth edition, they're challenging. They take damage. There's a possibility that someone could die. And of course, I'm matured enough to kind of know what to do. But at the same time, I had to learn that all on my own, or, you know, watch Matt Mercer do a whole bunch of resurrection rituals to be all like, hey, that seems pretty cool, I want to do that. But this will give you some sort of guidance and help you kind of, you know, either go through it, pass along, or find ways to, you know, work with it and move the whole story forward and stuff. Along with that is character alignment, which isn't really, you know, used a lot, but the descriptions that they were using in the video made me think that this could be something to incorporate more into the game. The big key difference is that your character alignment doesn't dictate what you do. What you do actually dictates your character alignment. And the example that they used was, you know, like an enemy goblin that you've taken in, then you've kind of given it a change of heart. That would be, you know, changing its alignment from turning evil into good and stuff. So it talks about, alignment being fluid, how it can change. And, this is something that is, you know, depending on how deeply you want to go into it, can really work with, you know, something that we're going with later on, reputation. But even more so, there are some creatures who will only react to, like, you know, good characters or evil characters or something like that. So having some sort of alignment or knowing where they stand on things is, you know, pretty important and can be used to great detail later on. So for something that I haven't really played with or touched a whole lot of, great. Love that. Next up, of course, we have one of the best toolkits that you can come across, which is the traps, the curses, and the hazards. Because just walking down a straight room with absolutely nothing going on is no fun for anyone. yeah, I mean, this is like different types of obstacles that you can just toss into a campaign. There's environmental things, there's traps, magical contagions, like tons of different stuff that they added in there. One of them is, you know, gravity works differently in this area, or this is an anti-magic zone. So it's not just, you know, poison spray or boulder falls or, you know, an explosion or something like that. It has a lot more to it. And, you know, again, will be something that you just kind of pull from and just pepper in, giving you, you know, like, I'm assuming like saving throws, damage, things like that to kind of give you an idea of what to use for that. Then there's also just random tables and tool of different tools and stuff for like, just spontaneously creating different things like settlements. There's a quick way to roll up names, which is every DM's bane. I don't care who you are, coming up with a name, even if it's the coolest sounding name in your head, as soon as you say it, it's going to make people laugh, or it's just going to be weird, or you're going to totally forget how to pronounce it, which I've definitely done that.
Sometimes you forget to write it down. Always write it.
Yes.
Down.
Most important.
Immediately.
Thing. Yeah. Because
immediately.
Two sessions later, it's going to be, hey, who is the guy that we talked to on the docks?
And then you're going to have to pray somebody wrote it down.
Yeah. Otherwise you just bluff it and, you know, go with it from that point on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, different names, personalities, details of the character and stuff. I love this because quickly coming up with NPCs is really fun.
Yeah.
Said no they've one all, ever.
They've also got some interesting stuff like mental stress, fear, psychic damage, how to handle that when exploring. They've got a whole thing on siege weapons, firearms, and creative combat options, which is super cool. But the one I'm really excited about is the mobs, chases, and streamlined mechanics for handling mobs, large-scale encounters, as well as how to run and manage chases in both urban and wilderness environments. I love this because this is something that really didn't exist before.
Mm-hmm.
And chase scenes can actually be really hard, especially for newer DMs.
Yeah.
It can be hard to figure out how to do it and what's going on. I believe we actually have an episode where we talked about this. And how to run a chase scene that I highly recommend because I thought it was really good. But I do love that they are putting something like that in the actual Dungeon Master's Guide. And for those who do not have MCDM's Flea Mortals and the incredible minion rules that go along with them, having, again, official rules or official guidelines for how to run larger scale, larger mob type scale encounters, I think will be a really good thing to have for people. It's just like, I need, you know, I really want 20 zombies or 50 zombies or 100 skeletons, you know, or whatever large amount of things to make an encounter feel good or allow your players to just be able to kind of lawnmower through the chaff essentially to get to the big bad and make it feel very epic and like you're really slogging through this gauntlet. Having those type of guidelines is going to be really good.
Oh, definitely. And just a heads up for that chase episode, it was episode 117 for us. So you know, if you want to listen to that, check it out.
Wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. Last but not least, from the toolbox, I do have to say they specifically called out doors. They will have stats.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. Have stats on types of doors, the AC of the door, the health of the door, well, damage, hit points, whatever you want to call it for a door, I guess, as well as, you know, like how difficult a lock would be, different types of locks and things like that. And I love the fact that they called that out because doors are seriously the bane of everyone's existence. You come up to it. Okay. Is it going to be trapped? Am I going to be able to open it? Is it locked? If it is locked, how do I break through it or, you know, figure out a way around it or something along those lines? So, yeah, I absolutely love that. I'm glad that they put that into the toolbox. But I will say when I get the DMG, this is the first place I'm going to go. I am incredibly excited about that.
I completely agree. This is a very solid chat. Like, this is going to be a very fun, very solid chapter.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we didn't mention actually during the crafting section is that they did actually talk about a lot of the actual just magic items being put in the game as well. Totally forgot to mention that because we were excited about crafting. So yeah, also tons of art, tons of magic items in the magic items section. So anyways, then moving forward, we've got another video about the new lore glossary, which I, not knowing a ton of D&D lore, am pretty excited about learning. Even if I never used any of this in my home game, it's still good to know because, one, when I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3, I'll recognize things. But on top of that, too, it gives you a lot of like kind of the rich history and everything about all the storytelling that's been happening for the past 50 years. And I think that that is something that, you know, everybody should really take a look at and, you know, kind of, you know, see where it started and where we are now, because there's so much, you know, depth and lore and story that this lore glossary will really, you know, help with. It's going to tell you about factions. It's going to tell you about, you know,
big mithril, adamantite.
Yeah. Like, just stuff, as well as, you know, like bad guys, I said factions, settings, locations.
They talked about how a lot of these like adventures they put out, there'll be these enemies or these places or whatever in, and a lot of times they just assume either people know what it is or they'll just, you know, be able to use the magic of the internet to kind of figure this out. Like, they don't have these deep explanations of what some of these things are. And they apparently kind of got together just like, we should really fix this because there's no good source of knowledge of like compiled source of knowledge of where a lot of this stuff is. So now the DMG in part can be part of that singular source. And they even said for a lot of the references, they'll actually have like, oh, like from Quest from the Infinite Staircase or, you know, from Curse of Strahd, and give you like the links essentially to where these things can be found outside of the DMG as well in content form.
Yeah. I mean, for that, that's a perfect example because when Curse of Strahd came out and all that, I didn't know anything about it, knew nothing about Barovia, knew no idea. I basically started learning about that just from, you know, osmosis, from just different, you know, D&D things that I've watched or learned or whatever. And now it's at the point where I'm like, oh, that's like horror world. And it seems like it could be fun, terrifying. And I know I need like three backup characters, but it seems like it could be a lot of fun. It's a campaign I would love to play in sometime, you know? And if I had had that lore glossary, I could be like, who's this Strahd fella everyone's talking about? And then go from there to go to Barovia, go to, you know, all the different things. Like Avernus is another thing. Like, I didn't really know how much of an actual campaign setting Avernus was and all the stuff that played into it. And then I was watching some of those D&D lives that they were, you know, those sessions that they were running at the, whatever the big thing that everybody got together for and stuff, where Matt Mercer was Boo. That's when I learned really about what Avernus was, like the soul machines and the soul coins and all that. And like the, you know, the billion year war or whatever between the demons and stuff. It's like,
yeah, the blood war.
Yeah. Blood war. There we go. Yeah. There's just so, like I said, so much lore is out there that I am also really excited to kind of dig into about this. You learn about, you know, a lot of like pantheon gods and stuff. And, that's kind of important if you want to bring in some of that stuff into your game, knowing some of it, you know, some stuff about it. I think one of the examples they used was Vlakith. Like, people will recognize that if they played Baldur's Gate 3, but you read about Vlakith and then that leads to the Githyanki. And then that leads to like the Mind Flayers. And then that leads to this and then this and this. And it's like following down those Wikipedia holes that people used to fall into, but it's right there in your book with all the different lore to just kind of, you know, flow you through all these different things. So really cool, extra awesome stuff. I mean, seriously,
I feel like this book is going to be one where I'll just take the, you know, the actual hardcover, just be like sitting on the couch or laying in bed and just reading it.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of, you know, kind of just, you know, picking at it for bits and pieces and stuff. This is going to be one of those, okay, let's take the time and actually read every page.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very excited about that. And speaking of that, this is actually going to be the first DMG that includes a full-on campaign setting.
Yes.
As well. The World of Greyhawk is coming back for 5th edition. The video on this was really interesting because Chris Perkins was talking about the original Greyhawk setting, and he said it was like 30 some pages in this little folder. And it had kind of just information about the city and then the surrounding areas and whatnot. So this is going to come with like a fold out map of Greyhawk, right? The city. And then on the other side, you get the actual like full region and such. And he said it's going to be like 32, 34 pages. So it's going to give you enough of like a foundation, enough of a skeleton to build off of and to kind of understand and know. They said the city itself is fairly fleshed out. There's like, you know, 3 or 4 different taverns that are like fully fleshed out. And like they've thought of like where the places the players would go, right, to buy things, to go relax, that sort of thing. And then it gets kind of less and less the further you get from the city. But I love the idea of basically giving, especially new DMs, just giving them a world to play in. Mm-hmm. A world that is fully, is in an actual D&D setting that's fleshed out enough that you can then take it and use your plot hooks, or even since there are 5 adventures, like very like single page adventures in this book, drop them into the world of Greyhawk. So I really love the idea and the fact that they're doing this and that it's a campaign guide. Kind of, again, I go back to that Matt Colville video where he talks about adventures being way too long, being able to have a just 30 some page setting and then little 1-page adventures you could drop into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love it. And this is exactly the type of thing that new DMs need to not become overwhelmed and to just get in and play and try to learn how to run a game.
Exactly. And the absolute intention of it is that, yeah, you have a starting point for it. You're supposed to, you know, see things and then make up your own adventures, make up your own plot hooks, make up your own stories, you know, use the 5 adventures that are in the book. Great. You got it. But there's this like huge map with all these different points of interest that you can make your own entirely. So not only is the DMG, you know, kind of giving you the tools that you need to, you know, learn how to run the game, giving you the tools to be able to do stuff on the fly, give you a background into everything that's going on. They're also giving you a world to say, hey, do whatever you want with this. Here's just the basic bits. Here's the skeleton. Like Ryan said, you know, get your feet wet and then start creating and just have fun. And that is something that I am very, like, for me, I got my own world, but like, there's no way that I'm not going to look at that and probably pull things from it or get ideas from it just based on what I see on the map or in the campaign setting or anything like that. Let's say I need a new town or something. Hey, there's a town in here that seems kind of cool and maybe what I wanted to use. Let's just use that. You know, I can pull anything from that, put it into my game. Or if I don't like what's in there, change the town, change the description, change what's going on, and do my own thing. Again, it's giving you the tools that you need that, or I should say, it's giving you the tools that you can use if you so choose and also make your own at the same time.
Yeah, it's a very smart way to go about it. And honestly, that kind of leads into just talking about how the Dungeon Master's Guide was written. Right. Mm-hmm. Polygon has a great article where they talk to the co-lead designer, James Wyatt, on the new DMG and how it's going to begin with a longer preamble featuring lots of guidance for how to prepare for your first game. It's the same sort of step-by-step open-ended instruction that is in the new 2024 Player's Handbook. So they basically, he says, you know, pulling out the camera a bit more into the Dungeon Master's head, cover the very basics of what is the DM's job? What do you need to get started? How do you find players to play with? What do you do to prepare for a session? And then the nitty gritty of how running a session goes. And they encourage, you know, DMs to learn from other DMs because imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, right?
Oh yeah,
and
definitely.
Finding people, DMs you jive with through actual plays or elsewhere in person, from a local gaming store, can be a great way to get in there. And in this article, they talked about how they actually worked with four outside consultants, because one of their goals as they were reviewing material was to help ensure that not only was the advice that we were giving to DM sensical, but that they were delivering ways to make the DM job easier. So they actually consulted with, and I think we've talked a little bit about Matt Mercer, of the Critical Role fame, obviously, actress Deborah Ann Wall, who is just an absolutely wonderful person and has run some of the my favorite actual plays. If you want to look up Relics and Rarities on YouTube, highly recommend that series that she DM'd. Very well done. Alyssa Vischer, who we have had on the podcast before, which is so freaking cool. She also consulted on the new DMG, as well as musician and educator Zach Clay. So very, very cool to see that they stepped outside themselves and talked to these four very, very strong DMs with a bunch of different points of view to add in and help edit and consult on the information that was going into this book.
Yeah, it really goes to show that, you know, the understanding of each DM being unique and creative in their own right really, you know, adds perspective and, you know, just different goals, different options, and overall just different fun stuff into DMing. And I absolutely love the fact that, you know, they reached out outside of Wizards to say, hey, you know what? We've got this big, huge thing. We're doing complete rewrite of the DMG. And you are some of the best people out there. Let's get your perspective and input on this. So I don't think that they could have asked better people.
Yeah, I think those are like four very solid consultants. And I'm sure they all four added a lot, and it's super cool because this is gonna be the DMG for the next decade, right? Like this is a big deal. So being able to contribute to that, it's got to be just a really cool, fun feeling, especially for those people who have been running this game for so long. They also, interestingly, this was like an interesting tidbit they threw in at the end of this article, mentioned that this is going to be Chris Perkins' last effort as a lead designer at Wizards of the Coast. And so a lot of people are just like, what? Chris has been around for forever. He's the D&D architect, essentially, at this point. But it was confirmed that he's actually moving to a different role. And he's going to be moving to a creative director role within D&D, which he says is more behind the scenes that lets me play quietly in a bunch of different sandboxes. So to me, that kind of says he's stepping back to take more of a mentor type role and mm-hmm. let some of the newer people start leading more of this next decade of D&D.
Yeah. And, you know, everything that I've seen about Chris Perkins, like he loves Dungeons and Dragons and is, you know, very passionate about it. And wants everybody out there to play, to have fun, you know, that's his goal. I know definitely earlier this year, Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast has been making some really bad decisions. And through it the entire time in my mind, I thought, well, people like Chris Perkins still work at the company and they still are there for the love of the game, for the passion behind it. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I've still been really hopeful about it. And the fact that he's being promoted to creative director means that aspect of that is still safe. And that's one of the things that I think is, you know, my biggest takeaway from this. You know, am I a little sad that he won't have, you know, his direct hands in everything? Maybe. But the thing is from what I've seen of the talent at Wizards of the Coast, they've got a lot of great people doing great things. And the fact that they know when they need to reach out and ask for help from different things is great too. And overall, I think it's going to be a good step in the right direction to bring us even better, more fun content. We just need more classes and some subclasses added. Besides that, you know, Chris, come on, please. Just a couple more classes. That'd be awesome. But yeah, besides that, I think we're going to be in a really, you know, like I feel like fifth edition has already been kind of the golden age. I think we're going into our second golden age going forward with this.
Yeah. And I mean, even speaking of that, it seems like the numbers are backing that up.
Mm-hmm.
There was an article that just came out today, literally today, October 23rd. where Wizards of the Coast says it had ordered a whole bunch of copies of the Player's Handbook to meet demand. The English language version of the 2024 Player's Handbook alone achieved in just 1 month what took nearly 2 years for the 2014 edition across all language versions available at that time frame.
Which seems like a lot. Absolutely insane. I mean, they did say that this is completely unprecedented for them. And, you know, they really thought that they had, you know, the numbers. They thought that, you know, they were pretty aggressive about, you know, their printing and how many they're going to make. I mean, it shows right there just the, you know, alternative art covers. They didn't even nearly have enough from what they needed. And granted, they're not making more, but the fact that they're already really needing to, you know, keep going and print more and everything, I think that's the pretty great.
Yeah. And they said they're going to try and make sure that that doesn't happen with the DMG. They've already ordered the whole second printing of it to prepare to meet demand. Hopefully that will include more of the special covers as well. I know my friendly local game store ended up selling out of both the Player's Handbook special cover and the actual new Player's Handbook for a little while as well. So it definitely does seem to be seeing more demand. And apparently the Player's Handbooks are going to be going into some of the bigger box retailers like Walmart and Target later this year or early 2025, which is super big deal. While his localizations of the Player's Handbook for 2024 will begin to reach new markets at that same time frame with copies in French, Italian, German, and Spanish.
Yep.
All currently in production, which is super awesome. The more languages, the better, because America is not the only place that plays D&D.
Yep.
So having it or not. In native language is a huge, huge deal. So I'm a big proponent of making it available in as many of the big languages as they can, just to allow for more people to access it that can. Mm-hmm. So that's super exciting. Obviously, we got the Monster Manual coming February of next year, and then the Dragon Anthology, you know, in the summer after that, which I'm actually very excited for. So it seems like things are going well for the 2024 edition. That I really just want to, Ben, I think we need to make an executive decision about what we're going to call it. I'm going to vote for 5.5.
I'm going to call it Dungeons and Dragons.
I mean, we got to
generation.
It's got to be differentiated.
Yeah.
Be differentiated. Like it's a 5.5 to me.
You know, I'm just going 2024.
You got 2024.
Yeah, I mean that's what they've been calling it, so I'm just gonna go with it. Until the rest of I don't really like it either, but I mean that's what they've been saying, so I'm sticking with it.
So whenever Ben says 2024, or whenever I say 5.5,
it's the same thing. You'll know what you're
talking about. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Yeah. Lots of really good previews of stuff. They even previewed, I think, the new Dungeon Master's screen, which there's an article. We'll have those in the show notes on theindiscussions.com if you want to check it out. Mm-hmm. It looks like it has several useful things. I was actually posting this on Blue Sky earlier today, just like, what is the most useful thing for you as a DM to have on your Dungeon Master screen? I've gotten some great responses already, but for me personally, the conditions mm-hmm. are definitely like, you know, the paralyzed, the poison, grappling type stuff, petrify, all these different things that don't come up all the time that you might not remember all the little rules or nuances for. That's definitely the most important thing for me. What about you, Ben? What's the most important thing for you to have behind that DM screen to remember?
The thing that I need the most is schools of magic. I need to know what they are and what they actually do.
That's a great one.
Yeah, entirely because of detect magic. But it's also good to know, you know, kind of if you're, you know, talking about magic or spells or something like that, having an understanding of like kind of where it falls in helps you. You know, or gives you the ability to describe it better. You know, if you know that, oh, it's going to be like a fireball or something like that. Evocation, but evocation is kind of like this. So, okay. You can kind of give more detail or more, flair, no pun intended, to your, you know, fire magic description.
I think that's really good. And especially the detect magic is a really good one mm-hmm. because people are just be like, is there any magic there? And you're like, yeah, something's ping. And they're like, what school is it? And you're like, oh God, I didn't think about that.
That's when you say you suck and look at your handy table. What I will say though, is that thing that's actually on the new screen that I think is probably one of the things that I need to know the most is damage severity kind of for level. They have, you know, they have it all, you know, broken out from the different four tiers. And then they have stuff as like kind of a nuisance and versus deadly. Like for instance, levels 1 through 4, for nuisance, it's 5 damage or like 1d10, for deadly, it's 2d10 or 11. And having that kind of broken out really helps you on the fly to kind of determine, you know, what's happening or what's going on. And then secondarily, the rules for long jump and high jump, because who knows those off the top of their head?
Not me.
Yeah. I'm always like, give me an athletics roll. Okay, cool. You do it. So yeah, I think those are probably of what's on the new one. Definitely important. I honestly don't know if they're on an old one or not, 'cause I don't use a DM screen most of the time, since I'm digital, but, when I do play in person, those would definitely be things that are handy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. Lots of DMG talk. Early access is starting here in just like a week or two. It's coming very soon, mid-November, for the actual release of the physical book. You'll start seeing it on online retailers and in your friendly local game store. So if all this stuff sounds cool, definitely check it out.
Yeah.
But now, Ben, I think we're going to take just a short bit to talk about player renown and reputation.
Yeah.
It's something we've touched on before, but not something we've like dedicated a little segment to. And it really just entails dealing with the notoriety of your characters as they level and as they do stuff and how that affects them and the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben, how do you handle that transition and that growth?
Well, it really kind of comes along with the territory of, you know, how your adventure itself is growing. So, you know, generally, you know, really low level characters, you're going to be, you know, maybe in the same town for a while. And as they start doing things, then, you know, they're going to get a little bit of a reputation or renown, like in that small town, you know, whether it's, that guy over there, the big sword, he's the one who cleared out the giant rats in the basement of the tavern or something, you know, like you might start getting recognized once or twice here or there. As they start gaining in level, the thing you have to realize is that adventurers are like superheroes. And, you know, we've talked about it before, like a 10 is basically average for whatever the stat is. And you're running around with things like, you know, 15s, 16s, 20s, and some things. You are definitely noticeable, especially if you choose to be. So based on that, like as, you know, your tales are growing or you're doing more for, you know, a town or, you know, just various people around, that's when your jobs start becoming, you know, a little bit more prominent. The mayor of the town might start asking you for favors. You know, you might become friends with them or something, you know, because your reputation overall is kind of growing. And that's all great and dandy and stuff. You could be the heroes of this town, and that could be a fantastic campaign. That could be where you want to end it. That could be all you want. But when you start going out into the rest of the world, that's when you have to start, as a DM, kind of thinking about how the actions in one place could potentially affect other places. Like for me, as the characters, you know, started kind of gaining more infamy and popularity and everything, and they started traveling to different areas, you know, there might be, you know, a merchant from one place who went to another place. And then, you know, they told the tale of, oh yeah, there were these giant rats in the tavern at, you know, the town over there. You've been there. Guess what? Rat free now, you know, so-and-so it, you know, went in there, took care of them. Big, huge buff lady. She just totally destroyed those rats, you know, absolutely amazing. So you start getting the, you know, people talking about you. Cause again, superheroes, they're going to start spreading everything that's going on. As the DM, it can be really fun to have some of that be, you know, completely inaccurate. Some of that can be exaggerated, you know, fun stuff like that. In fact, when my characters were traveling at one point, I had them run into a traveling bard, and he started telling them stories about a group with a very similar name to theirs and descriptions that were slightly off of each of them with slightly off names, and you know, their deeds were slightly off and stuff because he had heard about them from someone else. So this bard was, you know, creating his own, you know, versions of the stories and everything. And you know, he was going to go around and start telling their tales and singing their tales because, again, superheroes. You can definitely help control some of that too, if the players have a bard in their party. Like our bard in my home game, she's constantly, you know, creating up stories and singing the praises. Like whenever she performs at a tavern, she talks about the adventures that the party has gone on and done different things. And like our paladin is so much more of a folk hero. Like, that's her background too, but so much more of a folk hero everywhere she goes, because the bard is also hyping her up. And it's really cool because I'm able to kind of take that and play into it. So as they've gone around and, you know, traveled to a bunch of different places in this region and stuff, their name became bigger and bigger, and they would start to arrive at places where either they've been or they haven't been, and they've been recognized, they've been cheered, they've been lauded. People are buying drinks for them and things like that. And it helps the characters or the players see, like, I'm actually making a difference in affecting this world with my very presence. And then that's when you pull the rug out under them, when they go somewhere entirely different where they aren't known. And you can kind of start that again, but because you have that backing, the seeds could be in place so that, oh, I've heard of you, but, you know, you don't have that same high recognition and stuff. Till it gets to the point where, like for my home game, they spend a lot of time in this place called Trademore, which is, you know, a trading, you know, capital of the region. And there are people from all over there for this trade summit. And my people went and basically saved the whole thing, everything that was happening. So when those people went back to their hometowns and their home places, they took the stories of what happened. So if they were to go to one of those places that they've never been to before, they're known because of what happened. And as they're leveling up and, you know, their deeds are becoming more and more heroic, you're just spreading that around, which is absolutely fantastic and fun because it gives them, again, that sense of accomplishment, but it also gives you more tools as a DM for the plot. You can start bringing in backstories, things that, you know, were hidden or that characters are running from or something like that. Or you can bring out new threats, new challenges. Someone who, you know, has a huge ego and thinks, oh, you know, these stories must be exaggerated. I'm going to go up against them. I'm going to try to stop them and show that I'm better than them. Or on top of that, if their deeds are really well known, your BBEG might learn everything they need to know about them and have counters set and ready and in play.
That's great.
And
that's
great. Especially if they do something always, like if, say a wizard always polymorphs and then a cleric always banishes and then someone else always does something else, the BBEG could have some wizards ready to counterspell stuff right away. They could lure them into an anti-magic zone. They can know that the fighting prowess of the monk, like, that's their big go-to. They could entirely take out the cleric right away and then go for the monk after that or something along those lines. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you can use renown, reputation, and things against the party as well as for them. So just remember, as they level up, their story is always going to level up as well.
I love that explanation. I mean, I don't have a whole lot to add to that. That's really good. One of the things that stood out to me that I love is having NPC type storytellers in your game, mm-hmm. telling their stories. Like, I love the idea of that. I love the idea of, like, they'll like a bard type person randomly running into them and being like, did you hear about XYZ? You know, that happened when, you know, oh yeah, they actually did that. So I really love the idea of that. And I think that's a really cool way to show your players kind of where they are, how big of a deal something was. Mm-hmm. They're yeah. hearing people talk about, even if they don't know their faces, right? They've heard the deeds. And so being able to populate that and kind of proliferate that throughout your world or the area you're in is a really cool idea. And I like that a lot.
Yeah. I took it from two places, actually. Braveheart, because, you know, William Wallace is 7 feet tall and shoots fireballs out of his eyes and, well, the rest of it. And then also from Avatar: The Last Airbender, when they go to a play about themselves.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, this is great. I need to add yes. this because it just makes sense. Because, again, they're superheroes in this world. So stories are going to be told about them.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And I also like use that to your advantage for your bad guys,
mm-hmm.
right? Use that to your advantage for your bad guys to exploit the stories or try and twist the stories to their own ends. Because that's that type of psychological warfare can be very powerful in the story is getting told like this. No, it didn't happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that makes us sound like the bad guys, but that makes us sound like we messed something up.
Imagine your heroes walking into town and everyone's terrified of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's a lot of play you can get in that by taking that concept and kind of flipping it on its head too.
Mm-hmm.
And having the bad guy use that to their own advantage, based on their side of the story or their whims, to try and turn people against your heroes.
Yeah. I had a wizard, who basically did disguise self as my paladin and got access to a place where she was completely welcome and everything, ended up attacking one of their allies and, you know, stealing some stuff and then getting out there or getting out of there. And when the paladin arrived to that area again, they held her and basically it was, you know, talked through and figured out. Mainly because Herman, the German Shepherd shopkeeper, recognized that it was the wrong smell. So he was able to identify that this is the real one.
What a good boy.
Yeah, he's the bestest boy. He's great. Mm. But it was, yeah, I mean, it was one of those like, oh, that's right. Other people have magic too kind of things. So it can play into it.
Yeah, yeah, that's really great. What about you all? We'd love to hear your stories through email, through our Discord, through Blue Sky, of how you treat your players' renown as they grow in level, as they grow in power, as they grow in infamy, and what and how you handle that in your world. Because I think that's a really interesting concept and something that is core in, as Ben has been saying, a very much superhero type power level mm-hmm. game set. So it's always interesting to hear from that. So before we wrap up our show, we do want to give a quick shout out. If you want to find out more about the DMG from someone who actually has a copy of the DMG yes. right now, listeners of this podcast for a while know that we are both big fans of Ginny D, and she has gotten her hands on an early release copy of the DMG and has a really great video covering a lot of it and her thoughts on it. So we will have that linked in the show notes if you want to go jump in and check out more in depth from someone who actually has a copy of it right now. And then, of course, before we go, we usually like to talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our D&D games. Personally, for me, I was sick, which is why this episode is a few days late. But so we did not get to do our session at the time we had planned. We will actually be doing it at the end of this week instead. So I have not gotten to play again since then. But Ben, have you gotten to play again since we've last talked?
Well, this is going to be a really short what we've done in our game session, because one of my players was out of country, which is also why this episode is late. So it was definitely on both of our parts, because I was her original ride home from the airport, and then her flight was delayed for forever. So anyways,
it was a perfect storm.
Yeah,
perfect storm,
totally. Actually, we are also going to be playing this weekend on Sunday again, which is just so weird for me since I'm usually, you know, Saturday nights. So got to remember what it's like to play with daylight outside.
So next episode, we will have updates.
Yeah, because my people went into a secret entrance of a, you know, thieves guild hideout thing.
And that's where we're dealing with the aftermath of a party that they caused chaos at.
Oh, both really good places to pick up.
Yep.
Perfect.
But with that being said, thank you, everyone, so much for listening. We're excited to be back. And Ben, why don't you tell everybody where we can be reached so that if you want to chat with us or throw show ideas or anything else while you are between episodes, especially for the Discord, because we've had a lot of really great discussion going on in there. Ben, why don't you tell everybody where they can join us?
You bet. First off, I'm going to go ahead and toss it out to dndiscussions.com because that's basically where you're going to find everything you need. All of our episodes are there, as well as all of our socials, a link to the Discord. And then, of course, all of our different community pages or, you know, shout outs that we have. We always throw them up there as well. That's dndiscussions.com. If you don't want to go there, but you do want to follow us on Blue Sky Social, you can check us out there. We are at DN Discussions. A little bird told me that a lot of people are actually moving to Blue Sky. So now's the time to just, you know, give us a follow there, jump on in. It's a, you know, water's great. If you're looking for Ryan, he is at TBK Zord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. And again, the show is at DN Discussions. You know, we got this whole DN Discussions theme thing going on because if you type in dndiscussions@gmail.com and want to write us an email, that'd be the right place to go. Tell us about different things that you've done with Reputation. Tell us things you're excited for the new DMG. Tell us what you want us to call it. You know, whatever you want to do. We love getting your emails. We love hearing about your campaigns, all that fun stuff. As I said, Discord, there's a link on that on the websites for all of our definitely more recent posts. I'm not going to read you the Discord invite address because that's just weird. So definitely go there. You can join us on Discord. We love talking to everybody. And like Ryan said, we've had some really fun discussions as of late. So, you know, check it in. If you have questions about, you know, maybe how to run something on your campaign, we chime in, other listeners chime in, and there's been some really cool topics and ideas and stuff going on, so definitely join us there. That being said, if you want to listen to an actual play podcast that I am a part of, check out Plus Five to Hit. We are finishing up Rime of the Frost Maiden, and I know I've said that like the last five episodes, but there's a whole lot in this final chapter to do, so we are definitely getting on that part. We recorded 2 days ago, and ouch, that's all I'm going to say. Anyway, so check out Plus Five to Hit. As for this show, again, DN Discussions, you can find every single episode on dndiscussions.com, as I've said, as well as on your podcast player of choice. We're, you know, I think we're pretty much everywhere at this point. But that being said, Ryan, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad I get to geek out with you about new stuff coming out, old stuff, concepts, and of course our own home games, because we've both said it before, have a DM friend that you can tell secrets to. You need it. And with that, amen. Everybody, thank you for your support. Roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.